because it's not okay to hit certain things, right? We teach them baseball later on, or hit the ball, hit the racket, hit this, the punching bag. I mean, hitting does have some form of existence. It's okay. So you're not taking that away. You're channeling, navigating it, placing it where it does belong. So you can hit the floor, this and that. If it has an emotion attached to it, so it's not just the action, like you can tell your child is truly hitting you because they're angry. Oh, looks like you're angry. I can tell. Yeah. Uh-uh. No hitting me when you're angry. No. But you can stomp your feet. You can hit the floor when you're angry. Do you see that I am doing still the same? My intonation changes a little bit. I include another form of body language and sounds that convey the message, not just say the words. And also not just treat the action, the behavior, but also the emotion that's triggering it.
And if you want to be a part of the conversation too, then subscribe to my Patreon, www.patreon.com/Mr. Chaz, and join the conversation. Ask your own questions. Be a part of it for as low as $5 a month and get access to one-on-one coaching with me for as low as $20 a month.
What's my name? What's my name? What's my name?
Welcome to Mr. Chaz's Leadership, Parenting, and Teaching Podcast, where I introduce you to the people that can help you on your parenting, teaching, or leadership journey. And today I have for you Dr. Siggy. You guys may know her on Instagram. She has probably the most organized Instagram that I've ever seen on Instagram, with lots of great content, lots of great scripts, lots of great things. And I brought her here today with you to talk about the very triggering, challenging topic of hitting. And what do you do about hitting when kids are hitting? How do you handle it? Before we dive into the content, I'm going to let Dr. Siggy introduce herself.
Hi, Mr. Chaz. I am really happy to meet you and be here. My name is Dr. Siggy, and I work with a lot of children and families, which gives me such a great insight to so many people's worlds. But I also bring my understanding, my intuition, my experience of child development and human development in general, that allows me to give them an understanding of where they are and how to make that better. It's not about fixing everything. It's about managing through most of the situations, because when something doesn't work, we lose it. Mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing. It's not about making everything perfect. That is impossible. We know. It's about right then, in front of that chaos, when you are in the midst of it, how can you not lose it? Because when you use understanding, information, self-awareness, it helps you manage and deal with the situation better. When hitting, like you said, is so triggering. So we need to learn to manage that, not avoid it or dismiss it or wish it never happens. I mean, we can do all that, but that's not realistic.
I think wishing it never happened probably doesn't do much to help the situation to move anyone forward. But I'd be lying to say if I said that I haven't been there wishing that this hitting didn't happen, or wishing for the hitting to stop happening and trying to rack my brain on how to stop it. It can be a very hard topic. And so first, let's talk about it kind of broadly, as we typically do, before we get into the nuances of, you know, different age groups, as we will, because we're going to talk about different age groups today. But I want to ask you, from a larger perspective, especially since, you know, you just talked about like self-awareness and understanding, how do we understand hitting? Like, how can we even start to just process what's going on with hitting? Because a lot of times we see hitting, a child's hitting their brother, hitting a friend, hitting you, or, you know, what, hitting themselves. And we jump to really big conclusions like, oh man, they're going to be, you know, a psychopath, killer, murderer, something like that. Like, and we go there. And so I just want to start off with asking, how can we understand hitting? Kind of just break it down, help us understand, Dr. Siggy.
Yes, absolutely. You're right. That the fear of what it actually means takes us into all these horrific scenarios. Well, let's take it to the very beginning. Hitting is instinctual, it's primal, it's part of our wiring. It is there at, yes, maybe the lower level of our development, which we cannot ignore it, nature, it's right there. So when we understand it, we know we cannot wish it away, we cannot eliminate it. It's in the wiring. We don't fight nature. We understand nature. We also know that we're not just primal being. Mm. So we are not there all the time, but it gets triggered. And we all know that feeling of, wanting to hit something. Yeah. What stops us 90% of the time is our other brains, is the ability to walk or take this primal need through the filters of the other brains, which is what we are helping our children recognize and do better off. Mm. That's really what it means.
Great, great, great. Thank you for that. And so then my first question, you know, talking about, you know, what stops from hitting is, you know, getting access to our other brains. That makes me first go to the infants, the babies, because they have the least developed brains of all the ages. And so, and it can still be just as triggering for parents of infants when, you know, the infant is hitting them or their brother or whoever, hitting the dog or the cat or whatever. And, you know, so how do we navigate that situation with a child so young?
Right. So when we want to distinguish, so when infants, real infants, you know, anyone under the age of 12 months are hitting, it's still a lot of just their body not in sync with the brain, right? They're just doing a lot of involuntary movement. Yes, sometimes they try to hit. They also try to grab, bring it all to their mouth and so on. When we talk about hitting that is a little more intentional, even though it's still primal, it's still instinctual, but it begins to be more intentional, like really, I want to hurt you. That's in toddlerhood. So we're looking at children, maybe young, 14 months and on, where they don't get something, where it's not as quick, where you're right there in their face and they are feeling whatever it is, whether it's anger, fear, stress, they hit.
Yeah.
That's the first times we begin to actually understand that that is a behavior we need to do something about. Because when an infant hits, yeah, we can just kind of, yeah, no, and, you know, move the dog, move them, yeah, give them something else. They can hit other stuff, pound on whatever toys. It's the toddlers that we want to begin to really intervene there. So we are helping them evolve from where they are to the next level, which they will be.
Yeah.
So what do we do when toddlers hit?
Yep. Next question.
Yes. So toddlers, 12 months, 14 months, when you really are watching your toddler looking at you and actually doing that to you intentionally. And that can go on for, I mean, they're 2, 2.5 to even 3 almost, you know, in that kind of age range. So you want to be very specific. We usually say, no hitting. Notice the intonation is almost like pleading, begging, right? Trying for them to be with us on the same level. and a toddler, a young child, very egocentric, very self-serving. Why not? I mean, if they could, they would say, why not? I like it, right? And we sometimes say even that. No, don't hit me. I don't like that. Well, if I'm a toddler and I could say anything, it would be, but I do. So which one of us here count? Oh, I count. So they're not selfish, but they are self-centered. They cannot be any other way, because in order to not be self-centered, you need to grow experience and understanding. So back to that, you want to be specific, you want to be firm, you want to be clear. You can hold their hand right then and there. You're not hurting them. We know that. You can even kind of hold their body, but it's mostly like that. Whoa, no hitting me. No. Now you do say something about them. Oh, I can see you want to hit, because remember, they're egocentric. You don't just stop them from doing what doesn't please you. You help them do what's right for them as well. It's you and I in this together. Yes. It's not either or. So no hitting me, no. But, and now you can provide alternatives. So think, for every no, there can be 2-3 yeses. Mm-hmm. You can hit the floor. So if it's just about hitting, biting, you can use it for anything, pulling, pushing. No, can't push your friend. But you can push a shopping cart, the door open, the chair to the table, plenty of things to push, to pull, to hit, right? So back to that, can hit the floor if you really just are looking at the action. So you take the same action, because it's not okay to hit. Certain things, right? We teach them baseball later on, or hit the ball, hit the racket, hit this, the punching bag. I mean, hitting does have some form of existence. It's okay. So you're not taking that away. You're channeling, navigating it, placing it where it does belong. So you can hit the floor, this and that. If it has an emotion attached to it, so it's not just the action, like you can tell your child is truly hitting you because they're angry. Oh, looks like you're angry. I can tell. No hitting me when you're angry. No. But you can stomp your feet. You can hit the floor when you're angry. Do you see that I am doing still the same? My intonation changes a little bit. I include another form of body language and sounds that convey the message, not just say the words. And also not just treat the action, the behavior, but also the emotion that's triggering it. And I'm channeling both. That's what we want to do.
So why bring up the emotion?
Because the emotion is there. So they're not, you know, again, yeah, we got all these different brains. We start with the primal, but even newborns have emotions. Their cries are not all the same, right? I don't know about an alligator or a snake that we can, you know, say they have more than primal. They have what they need. They need what they want, and that's about it. But human beings have more than that, even at birth. So the emotion is there. You can't not respond to it, because that would be the elephant in the room. We're not looking at it. It's there. You must look at it. You must acknowledge it.
I mean, what would happen if you didn't acknowledge it? If you just said the, you know, no hitting, and you told them what not to do, and you told them you can hit the floor, you can hit this, you can hit that, but you didn't acknowledge emotion. What's the problem in that?
You're treating them almost just as a behavior. It's almost like a thin layer of who they are. Mm-hmm. But a behavior is triggered by something more than that. So you can't just treat that outer layer. It's thin, it's flimsy, it's not enough. You know, human beings, think about it. We are multi-layered. So you got to see, you know, more than just the outer layer. What I see is what I treat. what I see is what I treat, and then what I know is also what I treat.
Mm.
And also, I just want to say this, you are preparing them to recognize that emotions do need outlets. They cannot be held in. They cannot be thrown out. Oh, don't think about it. Don't feel that. I mean, we've heard it for millions of years. It doesn't exist. Yeah, you can tell me as much as you want. Ignore it. Don't think about it. Don't mind it. Yeah, it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
So recognize, acknowledge. Actually, what is mindfulness and awareness? It's actually right here. I'm not tossing it aside. I'm acknowledging, validating, and then I learn to manage it, deal with it, cope through it.
So, you know, it sounds like you're starting to connect them to their kind of inner layers themselves, their emotions, kind of what's at the root, what's deeper than just their surface behavior, which sounds like a lot of skills that us adults sometimes need to work on and at the very least acknowledging. But I'm going to throw a different scenario at you a little bit and kind of up the ages a little bit. So, and give you a specific scenario, right? So a lot of times with parents, especially, they have children who are in different developmental stages, right? They got the four-year-old who is maybe they're building the blocks or the Lego tower or whatever, their dinosaur garage, and they like to build it and play with it and keep it and save it. And then they have their two-year-old sibling who's not quite there yet. Like, yeah, sure, they think the dinosaur garage is cool, but they much rather see it burn and knock down and fall down to the ground. And that could be really frustrating for a four-year-old who's, you know, still developing, and a two-year-old who is also, they're just in those different stages. And so what may happen as a result, or happens often, is that the four-year-old will, you know, hit the two-year-old. He knocked on his tower. So that's his, you know, he's knocking him down, like, get off my stuff, right? Pushes him down, the two-year-old cries. Then we come in and we're like, you know, what happened? We see the two-year-old on the floor and they're like, he did it. You know, so how do you handle that? You know, I actually want you to take me, say you're that parent who's walking in, maybe didn't even fully see what happened, or you heard the crash, you kind of looked at the scene, you probably inferred some things. How would you kind of approach that situation, you as the parent going into there?
Right. You don't ask any of these questions that you actually know the answer to, because you're absolutely right. Sometimes it happens in front of you, and sometimes you hear the loud scream and you walk in and one is on the floor crying and the other one, well, he did, and so on, trying to justify themselves immediately, right?
Yeah.
Because you said, why did you do it? And what happened? And as if you don't know.
Yeah.
Be smart. Parents, be smart. I'm a smart parent. I walk in and I can see very quickly what is going on. And I am saying, not asking. I'm letting them know, oh, you guys are having a fight. And he's screaming, he did that, and so on and so forth. I want to tell you this, the details don't actually matter, because your job is not to get your kids out of this fight, but because it's going to be impossible. Whatever happened, happened, and it's going to happen again and again, because they can't really fight their instincts in the moment that they're faced with it. My brother knocked everything I just did down and I hit him. It's that quick. I mean, cause and effect.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you know it's going to happen again. So your job is to actually be there to calm them down for the sake of them actually learning to communicate with one another, for them to see those scenarios ahead of time. So it would be something like, yeah, I can see you hit him. Well, he did this. No, I get it. I get it. Again, remember, the hitting was instinctual, and it was my way of retaliating and fixing the situation for my sake. I wasn't thinking about my little one. Maybe a split second later, I feel bad. I feel guilty. I feel remorse. I feel blamed. all kinds of stuff, right? We have a lot of emotions. We also want to avoid that for our children. We don't want them to be filled with additional, you know, these sort of big emotions that are very difficult to contain. We already have enough guilt and remorse and shame and to begin with. So now we are putting more. No. So I can see, yeah, he did that to you. That must have felt terrible. You see, I'm going to the emotional brain and then to the cognitive brain, which are not that quick. Yeah. In comparison to instincts, emotion are also quick. Ta-da! I feel what I feel. But instinct is like a meteor. It's even faster than that.
Yeah.
And thinking takes much more time. If I have to think about what to do with my little brother right now, no, I don't want to. He knocked my tower down. I'm upset. I'm going to react. But I am teaching my kids to think it through, to see past that moment. So it's like, I know he knocked it down. It must have felt terrible. Yeah. And then, and why, and so on. And he always does it. Yeah. Like, you know, they try to justify again why they did what they did. And I want to say, I get it. I'm not saying it's okay, but I get where you were coming from. And now I'm going to help you correct that, not me correcting you. So, did you know he was going to do that? Because that's the thing, that children are actually very smart. A four-year-old knows their two-year-old brother or sister. They do.
Yeah.
We can even say something like, why do you think he did it? Because, you know, they immediately go into blame, right? And labeling, he's mean, he's bad, take him away, I hate him, like all that kind of stuff. There's no further thought behind it. Why do you think your brother did it? I don't know. He's just mean. He always does it. No, I get that that's what it feels to you. But why do you think he did that? I guarantee you all children actually know. He was jealous, wanted my attention. He wanted to do it too. They come up with the reasons on their own, which is true. Because why did this little one do it? He wanted to be right there in the center of it. There's also, you know, other reasons why, but it doesn't actually matter right now. So ask your one child, why do you think he did that? Yeah, you're right. I'm not saying it's okay that he did it, but there is a better explanation. Is there anything you can say to him? I don't like when you do it. Don't do it. I mean, you know, the toy world is, and maybe something else. If he's jealous, oh, maybe you can invite him in, because kids will say it. Maybe he wants to do what I do. You're right. Is there anything you can do next time so it doesn't happen? Because, you know, again, you want to teach them problem solving beyond the moment of how something went wrong. And problem solving skills are there to begin with, but we have to practice them. And they do require thinking, foreseeing, you know, they sort of like they require us to utilize way more skills than just an instinct. That's what you're teaching your child. You're also modeling for the other one. It's not, you know, why did you hit your brother? Can't you see he's crying? He's little. So I'm not really defending the little one against his brother, because to the older one right now, I just take sides, and they're going to remember that and revenge even more.
Yeah.
So yeah. I don't want to do that. So I'm kind of putting them both in this situation where they each have a role. They can both do something about it, and they can learn from it to maybe do something better next time. What do you think you can do next time when you see him coming in? Maybe you can say, here, look, I'm doing, because that's another thing. Siblings don't always communicate with one another until it's too late. But I want to show them you can, if you know your brother is already jealous, so he's going to come in and want to knock whatever it is you build down, maybe you can say something to him right before. Don't do that. Offer something. Do you want to play with me? Here you can build this, right? Show them how to be inclusive rather than exclusive. He did it to me and I hate him and that's it.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of really great things. You know, you mentioned kind of like say what you see, like look at the situation and, you know, don't ask questions that you already know the answer to. Ask them like if they knew that, you know, their brother was going to do that. Why do you think that he did it? And go through a process of problem solving with him. Now, I have a follow-up question because, you know, I think, you know, for the four-year-old, you know, upset and they want the problem to be solved and a little bit more attention span, like they're there for it. They're, you know, they're more likely to be here for that. But the two-year-old sometimes is, you know, they came in, they hit the thing, they did what they needed to do. And maybe there's a big reaction, but they don't want to be there for a whole conversation. Like their body's still moving. They still want to, you know, how do you handle, you know, that where the two-year-old is not as present as the four-year-old is?
Right. You use a lot of gestures, body language, eye contact when you are, you know, yeah, you knocked it down. Yeah, it's all not, yeah. Mm-hmm. You point, right? You include them in with a language that's more than just the words you're saying. Mm-hmm. And also something else, you break down the conversation to pieces. You really want to know. It's not that your children are not capable of taking the information. They're not able to process that information and really use it. So they're taking it all in. And then it's like, it's kind of like learning by rote memory, right? We can all memorize stuff. It doesn't mean, you know, that we actually understand. I remember when my, I don't know, by then maybe 80-year-old said to me one day, wow, I finally understand. I pledge allegiance. Because you said, I pledge allegiance, yeah, to the blah, 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 right? You don't actually know what it is you're saying. So we can all store a lot of stuff. It doesn't mean we can apply it. So speak clearly so they can process each thought, each concept, and truly understand. Yeah, you wanted to knock it down. Yeah, and then you did that. Yeah, it wasn't okay. Yeah. You wanted to play with your brother. I think that's what you really wanted. You can knock down anything you build. So look here, I'm going to put this together. Let's say that you and I are building this. You can knock this down. Yeah. Can you knock your brother's tower down? Yeah, no, because he built it. So you see, that's what I'm placing it in such a clear format when I'm really talking with them, not just at them.
Yeah. All right, now I gotta go into and talk about scripts a little bit, because on our social media, you do a really great job with, you know, showing scripts that are really helpful to a lot of people. And even in here, in this conversation, you know, there were kind of like some almost kind of like quote, you could probably take some bits out like, ooh, that's a script. I can use that, right? And there are probably some parents out there who are want to do it. They're excited to listen to this podcast because they're excited to get these scripts from you. And we had a little bit of a conversation about scripts before we started recording, but we didn't go into a whole conversation because I wanted to have it here. I want to know kind of what your overall thoughts are on scripts and kind of some things when parents are on social media, because scripts are a really popular thing. And it's also something that parents ask for a lot when, you know, from creators, and understandably so. What is something, what would you want parents to know when going and starting to, when they see a script and they want to use it and apply it for, you know, their children and their household, or even, you know, teachers who are taking scripts and trying to apply it, you know, for their children in their classroom? You know, talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on scripts.
Sure. So the scripts are a framework. They are like, and they include an understanding of where you need to come from. They include the intonation. They include the dynamic between you and your child. So it makes you hear how you want to place what it is you're saying. And so back to that. So the scripts are sort of like a concept of knowledge and intonation and dynamic. They include all of that. You can't use maybe, I mean, you can try use my scripts verbatim, but you have to personalize them to who you are. But what I mean by that is they include the understanding. So when I talk, when I use these scripts, you hear where I'm coming from, and you are learning about the developmental process that is happening behind the scenes. And that's why you're talking this way or saying it like that. And the intonation, I think, is very important as well, which is part of the script and why it's included, because the intonation really tells of where we're coming from. Mm. Our own emotions, frustration, shaming, guilting. These are things we feel and they're relevant. We can feel them, but you want to address something to someone else. You can't project those emotions unless you just really want to make them feel bad, which, you know, it's kind of like hitting. It's aggressive language in a way, right?
Yeah.
When we guilt and shame and, or even, you know, being sarcastic or frustrated or out of control, say whatever comes to our mind. It's the same as hitting.
Yeah. It's so, another way to lash out.
Yes, right? Exactly. You said it correctly. It's a way right. to lash out. So it's all about how you feel, but it's exclusive of the person right there.
Yeah.
And in a dialogue, in a conversation, when you want to deliver something to someone, you have to really understand that they have to be included in it. Otherwise, you're either just hitting them and they're doing this, or you're hitting them and they want to hit you back.
Yeah.
Cat and mouse, endlessly.
Yeah. And you know, another way I kind of think about scripts in terms of like how using them and applying them and in these situations, like, yeah. 100%, I agree with what you were saying in terms of understanding the larger kind of approach behind the script and what it's saying. And I kind of imagine, like, what if we did the same thing for like all of our relationships, right? Like, how would that turn out, right? If we, you know, maybe let's say you had like, there was a ongoing kind of issue with your partner or your spouse, and, you know, you went to like a relationship, you know, coach or whatever expert, and you know they're telling some things to say, you just took that script in that and you went in that situation and you try to use that script word for word, like that's not going to be authentic conversation. And it's especially if you're using the same script over and over and over and over again, that it will, if anything, it's going to make the other person feel worse and like more disconnected from you in the conversation. Another thing I think about is like, let's say you're really upset, like at work, right? And now maybe you felt like disrespected, or you felt like someone was taking credit for your work, or you felt like you're working too long of hours or whatever it is. And you went in to, you know, have a conversation with your boss and be like, hey, I have this grievance that I am experiencing that I'm really struggling with, and I want to kind of work this out. I feel overwhelmed, I feel frustrated. And they took out their little HR pad and started reading it verbatim, word for word, you know, what they're supposed to say. You're not going to feel very supported, you know, you're not going to feel very seen, and you're probably not going to be leaving that office feeling any better than when you entered that office. And so like, really just think about that, like those who are listening, this is, you know, this is still a relationship that you are a part of. And it's really important to, you know, do our best to show up authentically, also while still kind of learning these skills. And I get how, like, especially when you're in survival mode and you can't access parts of your brain, you're just like, what did Dr. Siggy say? And then, you know, that's the only thing that could come to mind. I get it. And maybe that's sometimes what you need to do, you know, but just continue to improve and kind of work towards making it authentic and making it really come from you, not from Dr. Siggy or Mr. Chaz or, you know, whoever you're learning from.
Very, very true. You're absolutely right. And you can copy, I mean, think about any skill that you're learning or knowledge and information. We do start with memory, memorizing, right? But memorization alone is not enough. It takes practice and experience, which requires us to bring our own self into it.
Yeah.
And learning when and exactly how to use it, that is us, is who we are.
Yeah.
And I can say it like simply, maybe in that when kids get older, and I've heard that many times, parents use a lot of that because, again, they all learn to be empathetic. We all learn that it's important. I understand. I understand. I understand. I understand. But I mean, we say these two words, I understand, until one day our child says, no, you don't. And they're actually right, because if we say too much, we're just basically throwing it out there all the time. Yeah. And I say, you know what? Think about it. Truly. Do you understand? Only say it then, you know, I actually understand. Yeah, I know exactly how that feels. I mean, don't just say I understand because you were told to say that.
Yes. Yes. And two, if you want to say that I let you understand, make sure that you are really taking the time to understand, right? Like you, because a lot of people are like, I want to be that understanding. I want my child to always feel seen and understood. And so that means that we have to, it's not about just saying the words, it's about really putting the work in to understanding this other human being that is, you know, a completely different stage of life that we are, and also maybe completely different personality and temperament and experiences than we've had. And so, you know, we're not, I think it's unrealistic to understand another person 100% of the time. I think it is realistic to always be working to understand and, you know, kind of staying in curiosity so that you can better see this child in front of you. And from that point, once you better are able to see and actually understand, then so much more opportunity, possibility for guidance can happen that we so badly want to do. And this kind of brings me to like some older ages. Let's get into older, outside of preschool. Let's go into kind of 5-8-year-old age. You know, they have a lot more words, a little better understanding of context of words. They're using them a lot more, you know, but hitting sometimes shows up. And actually, I would, since we were kind of talking about just the lashing out in general, you know, I'm gonna just make this question really broad. How do you deal with, you know, children who, and we're gonna say this same age group, right? We're talking about maybe, you know, two kindergartners or two first graders, two second graders, when they are lashing out at each other, maybe, you know, it could be something like, I wanted to sit there, or, you know, you took the thing that I wanted, or you have that toy, and they lash out at each other, whether verbally or physically. Where do you kind of go from that conversation? Is it the same as the preschool? Do you add more things for them to, you know, talk about and express? Talk to me.
Yes, absolutely. So it's almost the same, but you add more. But you also want to remember this, that at that point in school, there are different rules than at home. And the system is way more structured in such a way that it doesn't allow kids to just do whatever they want. Mm-hmm. And that's actually okay. It doesn't allow it. And children actually know that. So the incidents of two kindergartners actually lashing out, hitting each other, it does happen. Or second graders and so on. Yeah, these things do happen on the playground, but they don't happen as much. And it is the school job in a way to help these children again learn to negotiate, to communicate, to be direct with one another, to understand inclusivity or where the other person is coming from, because again, even second graders are still egocentric and still are influenced by others, and right, and things happen very quickly and they react and respond. Supervision is key, and not like you're not sort of policing them like that, but you are there to mentor, to chaperone, to see that there are maybe situations that can sort of bring about more tension and, you know, instincts like that, right? Primal instincts. And you're like, okay, guys, I can see that because you recognize these two. He started yelling. This one walked. He threw the ball, right? You read body language, you know. So you come, you know, you approach them. Looks like you're having a hard time. He's this, he's that. No, I get it. Okay. Yeah, let's talk about it. What else can we do? What do you think you can do? I understand he upset you because he said this. That was not okay. Maybe, you know, do you think you upset him? Because everybody's got a role in any dynamic. It's never just one bully, one victim. It's like we somehow bring something into that mix of our own. But I think the healing that we really want to talk about is not necessarily what happens at school. It's more like when five-year-olds or 8-year-olds not even hit their siblings, because sibling rivalry, again, is a very particular dynamic to constantly teach them, much like at school, to communicate and understand one another and see each other more than just that moment of he did and she did and so on. It's the kids that hit their parents. That's a whole different thing.
Talk about it then.
Yeah, that needs to be handled extremely firmly. The no is literally one cut off. You never approach a child that hit you. I mean, if a five-year-old hit you or an 8-year-old or even older, like, why are you doing this? Don't do that. What's wrong with you? Like, whoa, no. You have to stay the alpha right there. You have to be the bigger animal in that jungle in that moment, literally. There's no time to dialogue, to converse. Emotions right then don't matter, because your child at that age is able to regulate, knows actually what is appropriate. And when they cross that line, they do it fully intentionally. And your job there is not, don't hit me, don't be disrespectful. Think, this is not about you. When you help your child not hit you, you're actually saving them from themselves. It's not about you. Even when you're teaching your child to be respectful to you, it's still not about you. It's still about them. So don't put yourself sort of like as if it's all about you. It's me, Dawn, these are my rules, but you know, my house and so on. It's like, whoa, no way. You will never do that. And here I am for you. And you don't have to explain and say anything much more than that. You can say something like, and you know, you cannot do that. No way. And give it a moment, because your child is older and they need, how we say, come back to your senses. Takes some time, right? Give them that sort of, and they're like, calm yourself down. Now you can say something like, I get you're very angry. I get it. And you see, even my intonation, it's not like, I understand you're angry. Why are you angry? Let's talk about it. I say it clearly, one little idea at a time. I get you very angry. It's totally okay. You may not ever hit me when you are angry. You can be angry. And what I'm letting them know is that lashing out because what of how they're feeling is the only thing I'm actually fixing here or stopping. It's the lashing out, because this lashing out is, so it's righteous. It gives me the sense that I can do whatever because of how I feel. And I want to help parents, help their children. However you feel is perfectly fine. It doesn't mean you can do whatever you want because of how you feel. You can feel, and then we are going to see all these other ways to actually express how you feel, that is not crossing boundaries, lashing out, or inflicting how you feel on someone else. It's sharing how you feel. It's not putting them on, putting it on someone else. Yeah. That's the difference. So you see how I'm there to help my child contain, manage, cope with how they're feeling, communicate better, know that I'm here for them. It's not me against you. It's you against yourself. And I'm here to help you manage yourself better. Mm. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so, you know, what are, you know, especially at that age group, what are the some more of the things that we can do to help them kind of communicate or handle that situation in a better way when they're feeling, you know, frustrated or mad, overwhelmed, whatever it is?
Less is more. Talking way less and breaking it down in a lengthy kind of way, meaning that you don't have to fix it all right then and there. Mm-hmm. Do it one piece at a time. You want to talk about, yes, they have emotions, they need better regulation, they need better outlets, communication, and so on. Give them time to take one thing at a time. Don't imagine that you're going to give them now the whole entire book and then test them on it. Yeah. It's like, yeah. Oh, yeah, no, it doesn't happen that way. So stop the behavior and tell yourself, I know I'm going to talk to my child about emotions, even an hour later. They're not babies. You can do that.
Yeah.
The next day, sometimes actually, even in that way, less is more. The less you try to fix it all right then and there, as if it's all sitting on that one little split second, is wrong. Spread it. Take your time. That is actually better because it allows the brain, the child, to actually go through a lot of this on their own. So parents think that they need to explain everything. You know, the biggest complaint of parents today is that my parents didn't explain to me this and that. I had to do much of it on my own. I'm like, some of it was actually okay because you have your brain and you can do some of it on your own. You don't need, and even kids today, they're smart. They don't need everything spoon-fed to them. Let them think. And so you want to say something. Yeah. Not okay. And you actually know that. All right. Let's take a moment here. Let's talk about this more later. This, the hitting me. No, will never happen. But we can talk about it more. Not now. Yeah. Let's give it some time. That's how you want to do it. Break it down. Give them time to think for themselves, not to like feel bad. I'm sorry. It's not all about regret and guilt. Some of it is about, what should I do? What should I do differently? What can I do next time? Again, it's about acquiring problem-solving skills that require time and thinking and mentoring and brainstorming.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I talk about it like it's an ongoing conversation, right? This isn't going to be the last conversation that you have about emotions or lashing out, being overwhelmed or frustrated. Like, we're human, so that's going to come up. And there are going to be many opportunities to kind of review that lesson.
Yes.
Yeah, you don't have to do it all at once. And so... What about adults? How do we get adults to stop hitting each other? What do we, world peace? What do we do? How do
yeah,
we?
Yeah, world peace. Let's just say it. And... yeah. So,
okay. Oh, well, unless you got something on that. I mean...
Well, you know, I think that if we help our children grow into more regulated adults, maybe we can achieve some of it. I think it is a lot about dialoguing, and it's tough. Yeah. We all have emotions. We all have instincts. We all have subjection, right? We think what we think. We feel what we feel. It's me. It's mine. It's an ongoing dialogue, which I think we are doing continuously. We are evolving as a society, as a culture, as individuals, as families. It's you know, it's sort of like it's a breathing, growing kind of organism. Yeah. It doesn't stop. And we're just at one part of, or at another part of it now, increasing on however and whatever we can and making it better.
And, you know, I think about this, the world peace thing a lot. I said it jokingly, but like not jokingly. You know, I really do believe that we're building the foundations for the possibility of world peace, because without people being able to manage their own emotions without lashing out on someone else and being able to meet their own needs in healthier ways, that world peace will never happen. Even if we all agree to, you know, throw all of our, you know, weapons away and everyone live peacefully, we all sign the documents, something's going to happen in the world that's going to trigger someone, trigger a feeling. And if that person doesn't know how to manage that feeling and not able to do it in a way that's not hurting someone else or lashing out at someone else, they are going to hurt someone else. And that person's going to, they don't know how to manage that or do conflict resolution. They're going to lash back out, and it's going to be the same thing, whether it might not be countries, it might be factions and groups and families or whatever. But I really, really do believe that before any kind of political world peace could be sustainable, we have to really work on ourselves first as people. And I'm so grateful for, you know, people like you out here who are, you know, teaching parents to, you know, teach children and simultaneously teaching parents skills that they otherwise didn't learn growing up. And, you know, I think I agree with you. Like this is the ongoing conversation that we're having as humanity. And I'm hopeful that one day we will get there. Maybe not in my lifetime, but I think with, you know, everything that we're doing now and social media and content lives on, that you will continue to build and build and improve on all of these ideas and lessons and strategies and tools. And I really do believe that we are inching our way towards world peace, even with this podcast.
And you know what? I just want to say this. It is a conversation of diversity, by the way, in the family. Diversity is, you know, we tend to think about it in all these different big scales. It's true. It's important. But diversity is also within a family. We know that within a family, we're judgmental. We expect all of us to be exactly the same. Diversity is not about being the same. It's about recognizing actually the difference and then sort of like, okay, so we're different. Yeah, it's not the end of the world. It's kind of like that. And it starts with you learning and educating yourself more and more how diversity in your family is a key to be more inclusive, just in general, yourself, your siblings, each other partners, and so on and so forth. So think like that. My role is to teach my children to be inclusive already in the family, not just go out there and be kind to everybody, blah, blah. It's all great. It's true. But when you're not afraid of somebody being different, think of how every single day within your family, you're pointing a finger. He did this. I don't like that. You're right. I don't do it like daddy or grandma, or you're right. He's different than you. Yeah. You'll have to do this. He doesn't. You're absolutely right. Yeah. We're different. Yeah. So different is not scary. Right there, we are undoing some illusion or expectation that even in one family, we're all supposed to be the same, and that's world peace. No.
Such a really great point. I'm so glad that you said that, because it's there's diversity in every family. And, you know, it's really easy for, you know, one child who may have more challenges, or they're your second child, and you're like, oh man, I thought it was going to be like, I was spoiled with the first one, and the second one was really giving me a run for my money. And, you know, it's easy to compare and greater and less, and to just remind ourselves to appreciate the differences within our own family unit. I think that is huge. And a really great reminder for anyone out there. I really, really appreciate that thought. Any last things you want to say before we wrap it up?
No, I mean, it seems like you and I can forever. So.
What's my name? What's my name?